Welcome to another episode of the Big Pod Machine. Jason Williams, Gordon Wittenmeyer, our first off-season episode. Gordon, literally you walked into our studio here on the 12th floor at Plum Street, fresh off of writing the story. Joey Votto just posted on Cincinnati.com, told Dan Patrick on radio this morning he wants to play baseball next year. We wanted to dedicate this.
Whether the Reds want him or not.
Perfect. Exactly. Great point. We want to dedicate? Is that the right word? We want to talk about in this episode what's next. What do the Reds need to do in the offseason? And first of all, it starts with, I think, Joey Votto. What are they going to do with him? Bring him back or not? But he clearly wants to be somewhere next season. Your thoughts on that? And there's something we want to talk about, his value that maybe hasn't been talked about yet. But
yeah. He's dropped hints like since he went on that IL the second time for the 2 weeks where he went and strengthened that shoulder and came back for the last 3 weeks of the season. He said he felt it was night and day difference. Right. And so I talked to him at the end of the second to last road trip and asked him some of these very specific questions, and he wasn't ready to answer, but he did suggest, I at one point I told him, you sound like a guy that wants to play next year. And if they don't pick up that option, are you saying that, is it possible you could play for somebody else? And he said, some of that's not in my control, and I'm not ready to talk about things like that right now. So then at the end of the season, he talked before the last game of the season and again afterwards with the few riders that were on that trip. And basically said at that time too, I'm just not ready to say yet. So this is the first time he's come back out and said that he wants to play next year after dropping these hints. It sounded like this is where it was headed. There's a $20 million contract option, club option for next year. It's a $7 million buyout, so it's a $13 million decision. We've talked about this a lot.
Yes.
He was asked by on the Dan Patrick show, similar to what if they don't pick it up? He says, well, then I'll have a new experience. I'll be a free agent for the first time.
Wow.
So I think that, among other things, drops a pretty hefty organizational decision in the laps of ownership and Nick Kroll.
And I think that leads to the popularity of Joey Votto. You're the Reds. I think, does it? Well, let me ask, is it a tough decision for the Reds?
It should be. It should be an absolutely tough decision. There's multiple things in play here, right? Like, we can just talk about the baseball player. He's 40 years old. He's not what he was when he was 30.
Right.
He's not what he was in 2021.
Right.
Maybe, right? Because he's been hurt since then. And that was part of his rationale in talking to Patrick about he didn't want to go out with this taste in his mouth. So he thinks he can still play. So there might be more in the tank as a baseball player. But let's take that aside for a minute. Let's assume that that's on the books as part of the decision in the calculus already. The rest of it is things like, this is a very young team, and he behind the scenes has been a very big part of its collective development, all these rookies and second-year players that were contending till literally the second-to-last day of this season this year. That's value, right? And then on top of that, there's just simply the money. Like, we want to say, well, for the Cincinnati Reds, $20 million is a lot, or 13, however you want to measure that. That's a lot of money. They could spend that money elsewhere. Sure, whatever, in theory. But what's the value monetarily to the franchise? He's got the 13th most popular jersey in the game, in Major League Baseball right now. Pretty good for a small market, a player on a small market team.
And a guy who's missed a big chunk of last season and this season.
Yeah.
Not as big a chunk last season.
A lot of jersey sales are young people.
I think that when we were talking about this before we clicked the recorder on, I thought back to this in the summer. We were down at my parents live in Bluffton, South Carolina, in a retirement community there, right off of Hilton Head in Beaufort County. And my son, we're all in one of the pools there at the, and my son's wearing his Reds hat. This girl, about his age, 9, 10 years old, says, "Oh, the Reds." And she's like, "Joey Votto." And I said, so I was like, and I'm thinking like, and this is July. So I'm thinking like, you're a young fan. Number one, that's awesome that you're like, okay. And she's like, her and her dad, I think they live in that area, which she's a granddaughter of someone who lives there. Said that they've gone to every stadium. They go, they pick a new stadium every year. Yeah, they were going to Arizona that year or this year. But she was just like, it, like for her to be able to identify at a young age like that and someone who's not from Cincinnati, and like that's the first person she thought of. And at that moment, it wasn't like Ellie De La Cruz or Matt McClain, because this is we're talking peak Ellie De La Cruz moment here in what, early mid July.
Doesn't that tell you Matt something McClain, about this guy?
And it did tell right? me something. And I know that sounds really kind of basic and simple, but it told me something. And then when you see the stat that he's has the 13th most popular jersey, even after missing a huge chunk of this season, even after his and production being down, even after, you know, being hurt. And like, I remember I wrote a column after he went down last year thinking we may have seen the last of Joey Votto.
Yeah.
And I think Joey Votto has had in his mind that I'm not, you mentioned it, I'm not going out like this.
Yeah. You know what's
which
funny,
I think says a lot about him, and it's admirable on one hand. On the other, like at some point it has to end, and like what does he have left? And I guess what I'm trying to say is, thinking back to that girl at the pool, that I hadn't really like, this is probably a fine line kind of decision for the Reds, right? Like,
yeah.
The Reds are in a good place right now. I mean, there's some diehards that are frustrated, and rightfully so, after them not going all in. But I think generally you've got some goodwill right now. If you Joey now saying he wants to play and you don't bring him back, does that kind of get under the skin of some of the fan base, knowing how popular he is and how much this yeah. town loves him?
I think you spend some of your goodwill when you do that. And I do think that that's something that they're considering. Talking to Nick Kroll about it over the weekend, the last weekend of the season, you know, I asked him specifically about a number of things that might come into play on that decision. These were some of them.
Yeah.
His monetary value off the field,
yeah,
in relation to things like jersey sales and stuff. His relationship, obviously, with the organization, with the community, relationship with the players in the clubhouse, and what he does for that group. All of these things, and when I some of the less direct things, when I asked him, does that come into play with him? He said, with other players, no.
Mm-hmm.
With him, yes. He's a franchise icon. Nick Kroll has also said, I can't imagine him playing in another uniform. So I think what we're looking at here is a very tough decision here. I don't think it should be that tough, quite honestly. They're not paying enough people next year that the payroll's in a position where you can't bring him back and still do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And there's exit ramps to this if it doesn't work, right? Like if you were to bring him back and let's say he's not producing. Let's say he's going to be the first guy to tell you that he's not happy with that. Like if he just can't Absolutely. Do it anymore because of his age and whatever the case might be. If we get into mid-May, end of May, into June, and he's not feeling it, there's exit ramps to this, whether it's an IL move, a way for him to get out of the way of what might be best, you know, what might be best for the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the money's going to be spent, but all these other aspects of it make it a value move on a number of levels, even if what I just described does happen. But I don't think it's going to be a case where I don't think it would ever, under any circumstances, get to a place where it's awkward, where he's insisting on staying in the lineup or staying on the roster, or they've got to release him or anything like that. I don't think anything like that happens. I think that there's a graceful way for it to play out under all performance circumstances mm-hmm. next year if he's in a Reds uniform.
Yeah, you know, I'm still of the mind that when you're trying to strip away just the pure baseball aspect of it, try to take the emotions out of it, which you really can't.
You can't when it's a player like this, right?
Correct. I still think it's like you got to move on, and I know that's.
So you think the bottom line is buy him out and let him go to Toronto or wherever it's going to be. Let me correct myself
on that. I think the bottom line is two things. Well, two options. You buy him out and he goes. Or you buy him out and you renegotiate. Look, all right, Joey, we're going to
I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Reading between the lines on what he said to Dan Patrick, but also what he said prior to that, some of the things he said prior to that, I don't think that's going to happen. You buy him out, and I think you're saying, we love you, but this is goodbye. Hopefully, again, Toronto. I think Toronto is the one obvious place. Brandon Belt's contract is up. There's a niche there that he can fill for them, and that's the one place he has value beyond whatever his performance projection might be.
Yeah.
And so that's the obvious, right? And it would be a comfort zone for him. It would be a way to wrap things up. So if you buy him out, I think you're saying, hey, best of luck to you in Toronto. I don't think you're coming back and saying, well, so instead of that $13 million difference on what would have been the option, here's five more.
Yeah.
Here's five, so we're going to save eight. I don't think you start splitting hairs on that. I mean, and we say, well, that's a lot of money. It is and it isn't. I mean, this is a $11 or $12 billion industry, and the Reds make plenty of that. They're in good shape. It's not going to break them. It's not going to prevent them from doing anything else, unless they choose not to do something else.
So let's. I didn't think of this. Because we had some other things to talk about. But let's play out the game of if Votto does come back. What's his day to day look like? Is he your everyday first baseman? Your everyday DH?
He's not unless
splitting time with CES at first.
He's not unless he has this sort of career rebirth like he did in 2021. When he looked great again, when he could have won an MVP again. If he comes back and catches lightning in a bottle at that point, and he'll be prepared. I mean, we know that much about him. He's gonna work to prepare himself to be whatever he's got left in the tank. Mm-hmm. Then he's in there every day, and you figure out what to do with the other guys. But for now, what it looks like is a guy that would play every day against right-handers, which is most of the playing time. And given where his body might be at this point in his life and career, that might work well for a rest rotation for him too. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we're just talking about not facing lefties or even not facing most lefties. So you're still talking about playing 4 or 5 times a week. I think that might be that would certainly be what it would look like going in, and then you play it from there based on his performance. But obviously, Christian Encarnacion Strand, a right-handed hitter, is a guy that's going to rotate too. And you would think that all else being equal, those two guys would be first base DH. But then you've got other guys like our little friend right here, Jonathan India. That's another big decision, by the way, another decision that involves more than just on-field performance, because he's the next guy that has that kind of influence in the clubhouse that made this team what it was this year beyond its talent. So where does he fit with all these infielders that might be coming back? Does he need to take some DH time? Does he maybe need to take some first base? I don't know. Spencer Steer.
Or do they try to move him?
And that's what I'm alluding to here. And that's another one of those things that...
Now that's one I think would be a mistake.
I do too. I really do. I think they both would be a mistake. But I think Jonathan India, I think as much as people appreciate him and his ability to, like, his willingness to play hurt, his his focus on winning, his team first type attitude. As much as people recognize that and appreciate that since he's won the Rookie of the Year award a couple of years ago, I don't think he gets as much credit as he's probably due for what he did this year in bringing an extremely young group together. Yeah. And every time another young player came in and debuted, he was a big part of making that guy part of the team.
Yep.
Part of the team. I mean, I was going to say culture, but just part of the team, like making that guy feel like he belonged and was part of the big leagues.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases before the guy had played a day in the big leagues. And so that's a big deal.
No doubt about it. Let's jump on to, you got Nick Lodolo out here too. So we're talking about off-season moves. You and I discussed in our point-counterpoint column, Whitmire Williams column this week on Cincinnati.com. Very well read. Lots of good feedback on it. We touched more on, the Votto thing aside. We talked about what move we thought the Reds should make.
How do you upgrade this team, right?
What do you upgrade? And I said,
especially on the field.
And I think they need to get a veteran starting pitcher. I threw out Sonny Gray. He's an unrestricted free agent. That's not an NFL term, unrestricted free.
Yeah.
He's a free agent.
He's a free agent.
Right. I think he loved it here. I don't think he did. He liked it here.
I talked to him at the All-Star game and he said good things about his experience here. I think he would listen.
I think so too.
I also think the Cardinals are going to go hard after him, and they might be
as well. They should.
Yeah,
I think a lot of teams are going to go hard after him.
Yeah.
But I think he would be a really nice fit, given his history here and where he is in his career, his experience. I just think you drop that guy into that rotation. A talented young rotation, but a rotation that's been plagued by injuries this year. And that leads us to, this guy here,
right,
Nick Lodolo. Hunter Green was hurt. Graham Ashcraft, who's tried to fight through that toe thing and ultimately had to have surgery and season-ending surgery. You look at the core group of guys there of the five starters, Lodolo, in no particular order, Lodolo, Ashcraft, Green, Williamson, and Abbott. That's pretty five really strong young guys to build around, but they're also all five unproven guys.
Here's what I'm afraid of.
Still.
Here's what I'm afraid of for Reds fans is that this front office is going to go in and say, we still got our big three who are all second year pitchers this year. All guys that they made long-term contract offers to. Hunter Green took one.
Mm-hmm.
All three guys spent time on the IL and none of them had good years. Then they're going to say, but we had two rookies debut in left-handers Abbott and Williamson, who did really nice. And Williamson finished stronger than he started. Abbott ran out of gas.
Really good sign
for
Williamson.
But the first 10 starts for Abbott showed you what he's made of when he's not running out of gas. And so I'm afraid they're going to look at that and say, we've got a rotation in addition to Connor Phillips, who made a few starts down the stretch, and Carson Spires, who helped
Lyon Richardson
fill in, and Lyon Richardson. I'm afraid they're going to look at that and say, well, where would we even put one of these guys? Where in reality, that was part of your problem this year.
That was part of the deal with the trade deadline, essentially.
Yes.
Like,
yeah, you counted
on. We don't
want
to rock the boat here, and we're not going to get rid of any of our prospects.
And there's no, there's two ways to look at this. There's certainly the upside to look at, and that's certainly reasonable to think all these guys could be effective, established major league pitchers over the next year or two. It's entirely reasonable to think that in each of those cases, that could be the case.
Mm-hmm.
It's not reasonable to think that's going to be the case for all of them.
Right.
And which ones won't it be? And every single one of them has a question that comes with him, whether it's inexperience, which is the case with most of them. They just simply haven't done it. Only three of them have done it for a full season, but not really even that. If you consider the time missed as rookies for the big three, you're not talking about a heavy workload for any of these guys that they've put together start to finish in a season.
I mean, at this point, I think the injury prone label certainly applies to Nick Lodolo and Hunter Green. And so can you?
Yeah, I don't really count on I'm reluctant to use terms like that just because, you know, that's not a guy's fault.
And I know it's still a small sample size.
And they're still young. But the thing about Lodolo was we counted on him coming back. I say we. But we were told this, that they counted on this.
Well, that was part of the trade deadline deal, is that
right?
That was part of what the Reds were saying, and is that, hey, we're getting Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo back down the stretch from injury, and that'll really bolster the starting pitch or the pitching overall.
But when in Lodolo's case in particular, they kept moving that line back.
Yeah.
It was June, it was July, then it was maybe August, maybe by the end of August, then it was early September, and then it was he's going to be out for the year. We still don't know how bad that is, honestly. We don't know if that's something that's going to be chronic, recurring, or what.
Yeah.
We got to wait and find out. You can trust to whatever degree you want, whatever they say, but until he does it, we're not going to know. Mm. When he's right, man, he looks good. But we don't know. We don't know what any of these guys are going to look like next year. So to add that one starting pitcher that's a guy that's done it, got it done it for a full year, multiple years, you can count on, and also maybe set an example, that I think is huge. It would – had they done – a fraction of that. Got a guy, a fraction of Sonny Gray at the trade deadline. We would be talking about either they just got eliminated from the playoffs or they're advancing.
Or the second round,
that's what we would be talking about right now. We'd be talking about October for these guys.
Wouldn't game one be starting today, wouldn't it? Of the second round of the ALD or the NLDS?
I think Saturday, but maybe Friday.
Any other, you know, we talked about potential, you mentioned two bullpen arms. We also mentioned outfield.
Yeah. With the bullpen, you need to decide who you're bringing back. You can bring back any of those guys. None of them are going to be really expensive. You've got, you know, TJ Antone might be coming back next year. We don't know. I mean,
we thought he was coming back this year too.
What a great pitcher when he's been healthy. Yeah. What a great dude. And what a,
you root for a guy like that.
He's worked his butt off to
get back.
The effort he put in to get back.
And then get the setback after that.
So he's going to get a chance to come back and we'll see what happens there. Derek Law is interesting. He's a second time arbitration eligible. He was surprising. His personality is the kind of personality that I think was an intangible that kept a bullpen of cast-offs kind of together.
Yeah, you were talking to me about this.
And I think he's more important than they might think. He might be gone. He might be on his way out. They might not bring him back. I hope they do for their sake, and I hope they do for his sake because I like him. He's a good guy. So Antone and Law are the only guys, Lucas Sims is a third time arbitration eligible. So those are your arbitration decisions. The rest of the guys are 0-3.
Yeah.
You bring those guys back, it doesn't cost you anything. So then the decisions become, who do we want to add to this mix? Who do we want to bring to spring training that we say, okay, this guy is going to be one of our late inning guys, or this guy is going to be a multi-inning guy, and they're veterans, and we're going to pay him a couple million, maybe $3.5 million, whatever it takes to get somebody that we can bank on, maybe somebody from the left side.
Yep.
And then put the rest of these guys in that mix. And now you've got that much more depth, plus you've offset what is certain to be a volatility factor. You bring all these guys, you bring all the same guys back, you're not going to get the same results. Right. Simple. It ain't going to happen. Never happens. So you gotta think in terms of how do we make that better. So they need at least two bullpen arms too, in my mind.
Yeah. And then we talked the one other thing that we threw this out in the previous column, but certainly it applies to the offseason, is the outfield position, and that plays into potentially Ellie De La Cruz. You mentioned that you think the Reds should really consider him strongly as an outfielder. Converting him to outfielder, given all the backlog of players you have in the on the infield, him being center field would be really something to see, given his just his speed and his range and his arm strength. Even from right field would be very, very valuable to this team.
And that's not just me throwing that out there. There is some internal discussion in the organization about where he fits long term, and most people that have followed his career know that that's been something that's been discussed. It's this isn't anything new, but there is internal discussion even now within the organization about what they do going forward with him. He played a really long season. What he does in the off season is up for question now. Period. Like, how much are you going to ask him to work in the off season before, say, January when he starts to ramp up for spring training? He might want to play winter ball. I don't know if you want to overwork him. You got to do something to work on the strikeouts. But if he is going to play, you might want to just hit him a few fly balls.
Well, that leads us into our bleacher feature of the week, and got an email. This is from Mark, who was talking about our column from a few weeks ago, dovetailing off of the LA De La Cruz. He suggests, he says, what do you think about De La Cruz at third and Marte at shortstop, McLain, the second baseman? And that's something you crazy. And I, in our column, we did not discuss that scenario. I said you keep De La Cruz at shortstop.
Right.
I even threw out potentially India as the first baseman, McLain at second, Marte at third. You talked about De La Cruz in the outfield. I think you said then McLain at second, Marte at third, India at second base.
Well,
I don't know. What do you think about?
They're all shortstops, right? They're all shortstops by trade. Right. So that's a good question. That's a really good question. Yeah. And De La Cruz, if you're going to play him anywhere else on the infield besides shortstop, it's probably third base. McLain's your steadiest, best player in the group. Now, part of that is what he does with the bat, but he's a really good infielder. When they brought him up, they went from bottom three or five in all of baseball in fielding efficiency. When they plugged him in at shortstop, when they brought him up, they immediately jumped up into the top half. That's the kind of difference he makes. I like him at short, at least until Edwin Arroyo comes around, assuming Edwin Arroyo makes it, assuming his bat plays and the whole thing. He might be the best shortstop in the whole organization. He's a double A right now. But for now, this group, I like McLain there. I don't think there's a case to be made for all three. And McLain looks really good at second. And so
he does.
So
yes,
there
he
is
does.
So there is that. I lean toward Marte at third, McLain at short. But I don't
Ellie in the outfield.
Yeah, but you know, to the reader's point, I don't think that's terrible. I don't think that's a terrible solution. And these are the kinds of discussions exactly that they're having in-house as they look forward at this roster that's got redundancy at a lot of these positions.
This is loyal reader, Mark B, who's a big fan. He told me that he's excited about you.
Well, I appreciate that, man. I appreciate that a lot. Thanks.
Appreciate your honest, your accountability of ownership, the front office, and,
Mark, I appreciate that, man. Thanks for reading. I
appreciate the feedback from everyone. We're getting a lot. Some of these things we're already addressing in our discussions already. That's why I'm not going to sit here and read all of them, but keep those emails coming. G. Wittenmeyer at Inquirer.com, J. Williams at Inquirer.com on email, at GW MLB on Twitter, X, whatever we're calling it now, at J. Williams Cincy. Like, why are we calling it still? Why are people still calling it Twitter if it's X, or X if it's Twitter? Like,
in Chicago, why do they call the Willis Tower
Sears Tower.
The Sears Tower. And I don't even think it's called the Willis Tower anymore. I don't know what the hell it is. You know, they shouldn't have rebranded it. Why would you rebrand it?
I don't know.
That makes any sense.
Anyway.
Besides, when you have Twitter, you tweet.
Right. What do you do now?
You don't
X. Post.
You post, I guess.
That's what you post do on everywhere. Facebook, right?
Instagram. That makes sense.
That's an off-season point counterpoint column.
I think you're right.
You're a Twitter guy and I'm an X guy. No, I'm not. I'm kidding because we both agree on this one. Yes. It should just be Twitter. Anyway.
It's stupid.
Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Again, send us that feedback and we'll catch you next week.